This is continuing coverage of United States versus Sean Diddy Combs from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
She sat there pregnant and composed, facing the man she once told she loved. The man, she says, took that love and twisted it into control, humiliation, and abuse. That was the atmosphere in court this morning as Cassandra Cassie Ventura returned to the witness stand in the federal trial of Sean Diddy Combs. But this wasn't the tearful, emotionally raw testimony of a victim reliving trauma. This was the other side, the cross-examination. And today it was all about strategy. From the moment court opened, Diddy's defense came in swinging. Their aim was simple: make the jury doubt her. And they didn't start soft. They began reading old text messages Ventura had sent Diddy during the earlier years of their relationship. "I'm always ready for a freak off," she had written. She told him she loved him. She called him her king. The messages, read aloud one after the other, painted a picture of not a hostage, but a woman enamored, eager, willing. That was the point the defense wanted to hammer home. But Ventura didn't flinch. She didn't deny the messages. In fact, she confirmed every single one. What she pushed back on firmly was the idea that those messages meant she wanted what was happening. "I wanted to spend so much time with him," she said, "because I'd fallen in love with him, and I cared about him very much." Her voice was calm, but there was weight behind it. What the defense portrayed as enthusiastic consent, Ventura described as the emotional cost of loving someone she now says had power over her. The subtext of her testimony was clear. Survival sometimes looks like smiling through it. This wasn't a story of instant horror, she seemed to be telling them. This was a slow boil. Early in the relationship, she says she went along with things she didn't understand, didn't fully process, but over time, she realized what it all was, a cycle she says she was desperate to break free from. That included what she described earlier in the trial as freak-offs, as you said, sex parties orchestrated by Combs, where she says she was made to perform with strangers, sometimes while drugged, and often under surveillance. The defense today wanted to spin that back. Their goal was to walk the jury through those same events, but show them through a different lens, one of luxury, celebrity excess, and mutual consent. Then came the money. With the jurors watching closely, Combs' legal team brought up the $20 million settlement Ventura received in late 2023 after filing a civil lawsuit against Combs. That lawsuit, it's worth remembering, had only been public for 24 hours before it was settled. The defense asked her plainly, why would someone who'd suffered for over a decade agree to drop her case for a check in silence? The implication was obvious, that she wanted a payday, not justice. But Ventura didn't waver. If anything, this part of the testimony hit hardest. "I can't carry the shame, the guilt," she said, her voice cracking just slightly. "I came here to do the right thing." She told the jury that she had already received the money. She could have stayed quiet, but she didn't. Because, she says, the trauma didn't stop just because the check cleared. In fact, she testified that carrying the secret, pretending nothing happened, was eating her alive. She told the court she wasn't here for vengeance. She was here because she had to be. It was one of those moments in court where you could feel the shift, not in the facts, but in the room. She wasn't asking for sympathy. She wasn't crying for effect. She was stating flatly that abuse doesn't always look like what people expect, and that trauma doesn't disappear just because someone throws money at it. But the defense kept going. They turned to another detail that hadn't gotten much attention before today. The claim that Ventura had once offered Diddy the rights to a book she was writing about their relationship for $30 million. The offer, according to the defense, was turned down by Combs not long after she filed her lawsuit, and within a day she walked away with two-thirds of what she allegedly asked for in book rights. This, the defense claimed, was the timeline that mattered most. Love soured into rejection. Rejection became litigation. And litigation led to this courtroom. Again, Ventura pushed back not on the facts, but on what they meant. Yes, there were discussions about a book. Yes, she wanted to tell her story, but not, she said, as blackmail. She said she offered Combs the chance to be involved to give his side. She framed it as transparency, not extortion, and when he refused, she took her truth elsewhere. One of the more uncomfortable aspects of this morning's testimony was watching the defense try to reframe the freak offs as part of an alternative lifestyle. They didn't say it outright, but the implication was there. Combs was a swinger, a sexual adventurist, a man living an unconventional but consensual life with a partner who was into it until she wasn't. But Ventura shut that idea down with precision. She described those events as terrifying. She described herself as humiliated. She said she was often under the influence of drugs she hadn't taken willingly, participating in acts she didn't want for an audience she never agreed to. The defense leaned in harder. They tried to paint her as someone who regretted decisions, not someone who was coerced. They asked if she'd ever said no. She answered simply, "I didn't think I could." They asked if she ever left. She replied, "I tried." The most brutal moment came when they asked her directly, "Did you enjoy any of it?" Ventura paused, swallowed, and said, "No." That answer hung in the courtroom. No elaboration, no defense, just the word. Her cross-examination will continue into the afternoon and likely beyond. And with Ventura in the late stages of pregnancy, there's urgency to wrap her testimony soon. But even if this was only the first half of her cross, the morning session made one thing painfully clear. The defense's entire strategy hinges on flipping Ventura's words against her. They're not denying that the events happened. They're arguing about the meaning, about consent, about power, and it's a dangerous line to walk, especially with a jury watching a woman speak about her trauma in real time. There was no explosive meltdown, no dramatic revelation, but there didn't need to be. This wasn't about drama. This was about endurance. And for Cassie Ventura, the most powerful testimony came not in what she said, but in what she refused to let them take from her. By the time the court broke for lunch, she was still on the stand, composed, tired but steady, and with every question fired her way, she seemed to deliver the same silent message. "I'm still here. I'm still telling the truth, and I'm not going anywhere."
The neighborhood was picture perfect. Manicured lawns, kids riding bikes, friendly smiles exchanged over white picket fences. And then there was him, the guy who never made eye contact, the one who only left his house at night, dragging black trash bags to the curb. Bags that sometimes twitched. "He's just a little odd," they said. "Just keeps to himself." Until the smell started. Until the missing pets turned into missing people. Until someone finally had the nerve to peek inside that basement window. And if they had only subscribed to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, they could have listened to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi ad-free. And before everyone else, they could have recognized the warning signs. They could have gotten out, but they didn't. And now they're part of the next episode. Don't make the same mistake. Subscribe now to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts.